Hello, my friends. Hello, my life warriors, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to the Day In, Day Out podcast. Woo! Today on episode 161, I was very privileged to have Teresa Mitchell on the podcast. She is a documentary filmmaker. We talked about a number of things on the podcast today. We talked about her documentary project, Life After Loss. And yeah, basically how she was working on that and how she basically pulled together the production to get them filming. And basically the ongoing work she's doing with this documentary. We also talked about her time living in Alaska and basically how she's traveled around the United States. And yeah, what her sort of hopes and dreams are for her production company as well. It was a joy to speak to her. I've got to say, even though the subject matter was quite heavy, she brought an air of levity to it. Classy lady, look forward to working with her again in the future. So please subscribe to the podcast. It really does help. And yeah, enjoy the show. Have a great one, guys. Okay, yeah, peace. Hello, my friends. Hello, my life warriors, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to the Day In, Day Out podcast. Woo! Today on episode 161, I have the pleasure of having Teresa Mitchell on. She was playing with her camera, it distracted me. It's her fault, not mine. She is a documentary filmmaker. Yes. Her documentary, Life After Loss, is her project she's currently working on. And yeah, she's come to talk about this and who knows, a number of other things. Teresa, how are you today?
I am great. How are you?
I am good. Like over here in the UK, we've got to our first football finals since 1966. So, for the national team, yes. So, yeah.
Wow. Are you guys partying right now? Are y'all, celebrating out there now?
Well, put it this way. After Wednesday, I thought I was going to lose my voice. I had a podcast the following day, and I was like, yeah. I was, talking like this. I'm on a drink. So there was a certain degree of suffering on my part. I was between the rock of joy and suffering. Joy and pain. Yeah.
That's a good combination. Joy and pain.
Well, it depends on your proclivities, as they say. Dare I say it. I've got to say, you have got one hell of a laugh there. Yeah, it's like, yeah, a sign of a mischievous nature for sure. I can't.
Let me say that one, Bob. Yeah.
Oh, no, it's all good. Now, I have to ask, you started life in New York, Queens. Is that correct? So what brought you all the way from New York, Queens to, is it South Carolina?
What brought me here is I can afford to live out here.
Okay. Yeah.
As everybody knows, New York is the mecca of entrepreneurs, just being free out there, but cost of living is very high. Very high. So yeah.
So has the cost of living got even that bad in even in Queens, you know what I mean? Because when you say New York, the places which I think get most expensive, obviously Manhattan and sort of pushing up into Harlem, but sort of the Bronx, that's got the sort of tech places, but Queens I thought was a little bit more out there. No,
Queens, Brooklyn, and the Bronx, their rentals are extremely high. You can get a studio apartment for $1,800 or $2,000, depending on if you close to the train, park, public transportation, anywhere. So, yeah, if you close to the a hospital or the JFK airport or LaGuardia, you're spending a lot of money.
Oh my God. No, like this is the thing, like being in London myself, it's like I know about expensive rents and stuff like this. Trust me. It's like I had a vampire every each month just to do the living. But yeah. But when Queens, it's like, right, wow. So before you moved, were you always in New York?
No, I was born and raised in New York. And then when I hit college, I moved to Alaska, Fairbanks, Alaska, for 2 years. Yeah, I know.
Alaska. It's like, okay.
Alaska, yep. For 2 years. And then after Fairbanks, Alaska, I lived in Seattle, Washington for 2 months because it rained every other day. I couldn't stand that. So I moved back to New York. Yep.
Look, come on now. Look, okay. I have to, what on earth possessed? Look, I understand wanting your distance. I need some space. I need to get away from you guys. But like, Alaska. Look, Alaska's not... Alaska, from where I sit in the UK, that's 7,500 miles. That's like 7, like, yeah. It's like 7,000 to 7,500 miles. Like, okay, there's not much in Alaska. What did you do for 2 years in Alaska?
Oh my God, I met amazing people in Alaska. It was a military town, so you know, I was married at the time,
yeah,
to a military soldier, and when we moved out there, I was just like, oh God, this is a culture shock. Like, I don't know what to do. It was nothing to do, but it was fun. You know, I got to mountain climb. I got to parasail. I got to eat delicious food and meet a lot of great people. I mean, it was very cold. It was very cold.
Yeah, guys, you wanna know why it's cold? Because it's Alaska.
Yeah. I know.
It's Alaska. No, there's most probably more bears than people up in Alaska. That's like, how you doing, Charlie?
Well, I noticed the alcohol rate was high for months, you know, native Alaskans and, you know, people just living out there, because it's really nothing to do. You have the sun out till 2 o'clock in the morning, and then you only get like 4 hours of darkness, and then it's light, you know, for like 6 to 8 months. So yeah, it can be a lot of stress out there, but it was beautiful. It was beautiful, and it was something I'm glad I experienced.
Okay. So if I had a ticket for you right now to go back to Alaska to spend another 2 years, would you do it?
Only a year. I can't do 2 years. I'm too older. I'm older now.
It's like, look, I can take a year of daylight, but not. Oh my Lord.
That was my younger days.
Okay. Nice. My God. So you moved down to Seattle. Like, was this because like your husband at the time, you guys got relocated, or was that?
Yeah, we relocated. We moved to Seattle, Washington, and Seattle, Washington is beautiful, but it rained every other day. It was so depressing. I couldn't take it. So he was like, okay, you want to go back home? Yeah, I'm ready to go back home. I'll be back to New York City. Yeah, couldn't do it.
There you go. So you went back to New York. He was like, no, this place is too expensive. You see, that's what happened. You got ruined by Alaska. You got ruined by those Alaskan prices. Like, when you were in New York, you were just like all acclimatized to that New York price. And that, yeah. As soon as you went, oh, you mean I could get all of this for how much? What? you must double that to get all of this. No.
Yeah.
You get land as well.
Yep.
just like looking around, go, where's the camera crew? I know I'm being punked here. Come on. Yeah, come on.
Yep. Yeah.
Oh. He was like, he was like, look at you. I was like,
when I tell people that, they're looking at me like, you lived in Alaska? Like, yeah, I did. I did. I did it.
Oh my God. Yeah, because like this is the thing. And like when you say Alaska, I remember when I was working in like the Fresh Air Fund, like summer camp, like they've got a summer camp upstate New York. I don't know if you know the Fresh Air Fund organization, but like, we had like they brought in counselors from all through the United States and internationally as well. And like one girl, she was like, I come from the furthest place than anyone here. She was like, yep, don't even bother. Don't even try it. That girl from Japan was like, nope. It's like, I come from Alaska.
Yeah.
I've traveled further to be here with you today than anyone else. I was like, okay. Yeah. this is the thing. Like, so let me get this straight. So when you would, going like when you were married and like you were going off to Alaska, Seattle, coming back to New York, how did you sort of decide to start a film production company?
This didn't happen. I moved to Alaska in 2005.
Yeah,
and then I came back in 2007, and after that, my marriage was rocky. You know, it wasn't what I thought it would be, because we were still young. We were high school sweethearts. We were young. We didn't know what marriage is supposed to be or what it's supposed to look like.
Yeah.
So it was easy to get married, but it was harder to get divorced. We got a divorce in 2009. So after that, I just traveled. After coming back to New York City, left to go to Jersey. I left to go to Philly, moved to Florida. Stayed in Florida for 6 years. And then that's when I found out I was pregnant when I was in Florida. And this is the whole concept of my documentary, Life After Loss. I got pregnant while I was out there. I met a wonderful man out there and I got pregnant. And then we had a miscarriage. And then once we had a miscarriage, that rooted to a lot of uncertainties in my life. And in his life, he didn't understand what was going on. I didn't understand what was going on. So we wanted to try again, but we didn't. And then a few years later, I got pregnant again, had another miscarriage, but they didn't tell me the reason why this was happening to me. They only suspected that I had an incompetent cervix, but they didn't really actually pinpoint it that was the situation.
Right.
Until I got pregnant the second time, that's when he said, oh, it might be an incompetent cervix, but we can't do anything right now because you are too further along to do a vaginal cyclage. So when that happened, I lost the baby at 18 weeks. So the first time was 15 weeks, second time was 18 weeks.
Yeah.
Then I got pregnant again in 2016. With my third child, and that's when I seek help. I try to get counseling and get better doctors and figure out what was my problem, and they told me exactly what it was. I needed a vaginal cyclage to tie up the lower portion of my cervix to keep the baby up there. So I did that. Hopefully everything was good. I was mentally prepared. I was ready to have a baby boy. I was just so super excited that I got everything that I wanted to do. I got it in this third pregnancy. The last two, all my doctors, they did not listen to me. They dismissed me. They looked at me of the color of my skin, my occupation, and said, hey, we can't do nothing for you. And I'm like, really? This is ridiculous. So when I got pregnant the third time, I had all my doctors there that listened to me, seen me, and hurt me. They gave me a transvaginal cyclage. I was good until I got an infection. Got an infection, and it was one of those infections where it's going to cause me or my child's life. So I had to make a tough decision on what to do. So then I had to have a sporadic, what they call a sporadic abortion. Ooh. And that will eliminate the infection because the infection reached into the uterus. So now I can't carry this baby because the affection it was to was progressing that will lead in from my death and the baby's death. Mm. So at that particular time, I was depressed. I was in denial. I was angry. I was frustrated. I was going through my stages of grief. I wanted to kill myself. I wanted to go through a whole lot of things that I didn't want to go through. And then when it finally realized and clicked in was the moment where my best friend told me, don't give up. Figure out what you can do and let's do it together. I found a Black doctor. It was amazing. She gave me a trans abdominal cyclage, who gave me the opportunity to have my daughter now. My daughter's a rainbow baby. And this story is dedicated to her. It's telling her my struggles as a Black woman in America, that we are 3 to 4 times most likely to die at the hands of childbirth or complications after childbirth. And we have a lot of women that go through this and that is suffering in silence, you know, that doesn't want to talk about it, because who wants to talk about grief? Grief is something that you put in a little box and you put it away and you move on. You try to move on, but it still comes up in different ways and different emotions. So now I'm telling this story and many other women's stories to the fact that we have a voice, we have a choice, and we have the ability to touch each and everyone. Doesn't matter what your skin color of your skin is. If you're a woman and trying to have a baby or don't have a baby, we are here for you. We see you, we hear you, and we love you.
I see. I won't lie. That is, like, you know what I mean? You have been through a journey with regards to that. I've got two things. One, rainbow baby, just so I can, like, you know what I mean, get an idea of what that is. Like all I'm getting right now is either like a slight taste of Skittles or like, yeah.
A baby that is born after a loss, like a miscarriage or a stillbirth. So if you was pregnant like a year or two and then you had a stillbirth or a miscarriage and you got pregnant again and that baby survived, that's what they call a rainbow baby.
I see. A rainbow baby. Okay. I like that. I won't shake any Skittles at the child then. No. That won't be me. No. But like, this is the thing, like with regards to like, okay, would you say, I know you've had your experience with regards to the medical system and with regards to sort of like your pregnancy, your first two miscarriages. Would you say like, this has been kind of a running theme for like more and more women, even in these, like in the 21st century, more sort of progressive age, that women are seldom listened to when it comes to this type of thing, and like doctors know best?
It's been happening. I'm 38. It's been happening for 3 decades, maybe even longer, through slavery time, Jim Crow time. It's embedded in our history of Blacks, you know, Black people, that they feel that we can take pain, that we can give birth easily, that we can handle whatever they throw at us, we can take it. So for me, knowing the history and knowing that we are going through this, and we in America are like, we have the greatest accomplishment in America, where we have our tech and our economy and all this stuff, but our healthcare system is biased against us, just like our justice system is biased against us. We are most likely to die for being non-treated, non-heard, or non-seen. Mm-hmm. We are most likely to get misdiagnosed with an illness that we don't have. We are subject to go into these clinics that are going to a private hospital because of our funding and our insurance. We are most likely to get improper care because of the color of our skin. Mm. So this has been happening for many, many years. And even COVID, now that you've seen, you know, COVID affected a lot of Black and Brown individuals in the United States. We were the highest of getting the COVID, and then we was the highest of dying from it. And now we are the lowest of getting the vaccine from it too, because we don't have access like we're supposed to. So this is the problem with our healthcare system, where it doesn't fit our box as who we supposed to be.
Mm. Yeah, like this is the thing. I'm operating, like when I hear this, it's, I am in the UK and our healthcare system operates, it's like chalk and cheese in comparison to how it works over in America. Because look, if I broke a bone, I could just go to a hospital and get treated. No money will have to pass my hands to get that, to get me treated. If I needed medication, that's where I will have to make a payment for my medication. It's taken care of. Like over in the States, if I like broke a bone and I didn't have the adequate insurance, then it's going to cost a pretty penny. So would you say this kind of, I know you're doing this from the experience of, yes, a Black lady and like how it's affected the Black community. Would you say sometimes it just comes down to sometimes economics with regards to the health system? I say this because I sit here and I know what a medical bill can be like in America. It can literally ruin your whole life completely, financially speaking, you know?
Yeah, I don't believe about, it does have to play a factor, but for many of us Black women, like Serena Williams, and for a lot of celebrities that had, you know, great healthcare insurance and great, you know, good income status, they were dismissed with a lot of their, treatment, especially for Serena Williams. Like after she had her daughter, she had complications after, and they didn't listen to her. And I'm like, wow, she is a celebrity. Like she has money. Meghan Markle, she's the same one. You know, she had complications and then she had a miscarriage. You know, they wasn't listening to her. So these are the things that plays into the healthcare system, even if it's wherever you at. Doesn't matter how much money you have, it's the color of your skin. And if you don't have the right complexion for the protection, they're not going to treat you. Or if you have a good doctor that is going to listen to you, then you have a fighting chance. But our healthcare system needs to see you as an individual, not for the color of your skin, and treat you for being human. We have the right to go into a hospital or go into a doctor's office and get quality care. We should not be sitting here thinking about, oh, if I get treated this way and I can't afford it, should I take this pill to save my life or something? We shouldn't have to deal with that, but we do. You know, we should be able to save our Black babies. We should be able to produce healthy babies, but we don't have that. We don't have that luxury to have someone come in and tell us that we're doing something wrong or we're doing something right. But just being who we are, we have a stigma on our back.
Like I am curious because, like, with your documentary you're doing, like Life After Loss, like what has been some of the stories you've had for some of the ladies you've got like to come on the documentary?
Oh, I have. It's so many I can't even count right now. But we have particularly 9 women that's telling a story, and I have more in my email right now. The one story that stands out to me was this beautiful woman. She's pregnant. She's 9 months pregnant, about to have her baby. She went in on Friday to her doctors and told her doctor that she's feeling something's wrong. Doctor said it's pregnancy. You're almost, you know, you're having a C-section on Monday, but, you know, just go home and rest. Saturday, she had her baby shower. Sunday, she lost the baby. So if they had just took the initiative to check and seeing that her something was going on that day when she was there,
yeah,
probably would have saved her baby, you know. And, you know, other women too, like one lady, she had a miscarriage at 6 weeks, and come to find out that they didn't take all of the, when she had a DNC, they didn't take all of the pregnancy tissue out. And now she's infertile. So now she can't have a baby. And now when she does try to have a baby, she has to do all this IVF treatment and all this other stuff. If they had just took the time and treated her like a human being and made sure that she was okay when she had her miscarriage the first time. So it's many women's stories that have these tales of how they've been mistreated in the healthcare system in America. And it's sad. And then I have one lady, she gave birth to her healthy twins in Germany, and she got treated much better than what we got treated out here. And it's sad because she was a military wife. She went to Germany with no issues, no complications. It was a language barrier, but they listened to her. Mm. They understood, they took care of her needs. But when she came to the United States and tried to have her other kids, her babies died. So it shows you that you can be in a different community, in a different world, in a different setting, and get treated much better than you are at where you actually live.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's I think with the approach, when you like mentioned Germany, like Germany has a slightly different approach. I would say also France has a slightly different approach, where they sort of like, how can I say, they focus on prevention rather than actual sort of the, like going through the initial sort of treatment. And like with like, and like I say this, like holding my hands up here, like we might not pay for it, but like pay for the National Health Service directly, but we pay for it like slight tax and stuff like that. But it's more down the lines of treatment rather than prevention. So it's like, right. So I understand how that can sort of like, there's some parallels to the United States with regards to that. But I think with regards to, and I say this purely as not an expert, I'm not like, you know what I mean? I don't have MD in my name, but I think with regards to a lot of the medical professions around the world, it is, they don't sort of take that sort of line of, yes, let's prevent this, or let's act before something else happens. It's like, yeah, oh, this has happened, now we act. And sometimes, yeah, they can be super dismissive of like, yeah, many a person when it comes down to like, oh, I don't feel right and this is going on. And like, they might do a cursory check, or they might like go, oh yeah, yes. No, you're just like, you might just be a little bit queasy, off you go. And being like, for any sort of like pregnant lady, like there's a whole world of worries which go with that. And like, there are, I can imagine there are some doctors out there, not all of them, which might sort of be like, oh yeah, you're just worrying about nothing, off you go. No. Pat you on the head.
Yes. Here's a Band-Aid. You'll be all right.
Here's a Jolly Rancher. Off you go. You know what I mean? So, yeah.
Yeah. But, well, the doctors that I spoke to and we interviewed, they came to us and told us, like, listen, you know, it is a biopsy when it comes to Black and brown women. But it is also understanding the human body. We don't have all the answers. We might have a PhD, we might have a, you know, a college degree or whatever, but we don't have all the answers, but we can figure it out together. And I think that's where the line of communication happens. When you go to your doctor, are they listening to you? Are you listening to your doctor? Because some things the doctor might say, you might not heard it correctly, or the doc, you might say something and the doctor might not heard it correctly. So it is that understanding of communication that affects your individual treatment, because you want that treatment to happen the correct way, but then sometimes it don't happen that way. So I do understand that. I also understand that, you know, when it comes to us individual women being treated the same, hopefully it will happen eventually, but right now, you know, just for us to have this open conversation like we're having right now, to understanding that, you know, we're trying to bring home healthy babies. We're not trying to come home with a baby in a box. No. I came home three times with a baby in a box. I had to actually plan a funeral. Never did that in my life, you know, and that was the most traumatizing thing that I had. Like, especially being pregnant with Janae, my daughter, I couldn't click off the fact that every time I went to the hospital, they would say something positive, but I always had something negative in my head. But that was a trauma. That was for me not understanding the response that I needed to know that she was going to be okay. Even though I heard it, it still wasn't clicking in my mind.
Yeah.
So for me, I want women to know that a conversation with your doctor is very important. And if you don't like that doctor, change that doctor. Go fire that doctor and go find somebody else. Mm. If you don't feel comfortable with your doctor, go to somebody else. Don't let your insurance or don't let your doctor or his staff tell you otherwise. If you don't feel comfortable and they're not listening to you, go seek another doctor.
Mm. Yeah, like this is the thing. One of the things what strikes me about your story is like, yeah, going through the multiple miscarriages, but it was like you kind of mentioned it briefly, but you mentioned team and it, like on the whole thing with regards to the doctor which brought your lovely rainbow baby into this world, it was like, yeah, I need a, like, instead of like, I need a doctor, but I need someone who is on the team to make this happen, to make this pregnancy work all the way through term. And yeah, beautiful baby, like laughing, burping, doing all the things that babies do. But yeah, but like, I think that is one of the things, because you went through so many times that sort of trauma, like, sorry to say it, but trauma, it was a case of you were like, okay, yeah, this is what I need. This is what I want. And yeah, if I don't get these things, no, I don't care if I come across as like, yeah, an anal super Godzilla mother or whatnot, but I need to make sure you're on the team and you're here to help me out. And I think more sort of ladies out there do need to have that sort of like mentality of just like, look, it's a team effort. I'm carrying the baby, I'm carrying the ball, but I need to get over the line. And I can't do that without you helping me. And I think that's one of the things I think might be missing from one of the ingredients, like the confidence to say that, to speak up and go, yeah, get on board, you know?
Yeah, because I didn't have that in the beginning. I didn't have a support system where I have a support system now. And I think for me, being an advocate for my body, being an advocate for my child, that's when I started having that conversation and that support, because everything changed once I started talking about, once I started telling them like, no, I'm not about to do this, I want to do this. That's when things started changing. And when I was quiet, things just stayed the same, things that kept happening. And I'm like, oh my God, why am I not speaking up? Why am I not saying anything?
Yeah.
And I think that was me not educating myself and me not knowing. And I apologize to myself all the time. Like, I'm sorry. I forgive myself for not being there when I'm supposed to be there and not doing my due diligence and speaking up for myself. So now that I have that voice, I want that voice for every other woman, and especially my daughter. I want my daughter and my nieces and my nephews and my cousins, even my friends, to have that voice to know something ain't right. If it's not right, say it. If it is right, then let's get with the treatment and understanding what I'm supposed to have. And I want women to know that your voice is very important. No matter who says anything, your voice is very important to get that healing and to get that understanding of, even if it's not having a baby, but just, you know, breast cancer, or if you feeling like your mental health is not there, you feeling like you're overwhelmed, you're stressed out, have a voice, advocate for yourself. Like, I need help. I need somebody to help me or hear me or see me.
Yeah.
And that's what we need.
Yeah. Because like, this is the thing. Yeah. You said it was like mentally taxing the first time it happened. The second time it happened, it must be like, okay, I can't even fathom that. But like, through each stage, like, it was like, okay, like, without your friend, like, going, this will be okay. Like, what like, what other things did you bring into it? What, like, was there any sort of strategies, techniques you, like, brought yourself from the sort of, on basically staring into the abyss where you're like, going, yeah, might as well end it all, to, like, pulling you away from that and, like, going, okay, there is hope down there and I need to find it. What was it?
Therapy. I finally found a therapist. Mm-hmm. It took me a long time to find a therapist. I only had group therapy, and group therapy just is not what I thought it was. Like, I seen when I went to my first time going to group therapy, was a whole bunch of women that wasn't my color, wasn't me. I didn't see me in that room. So I kept going because I just wanted to see how it is and get that homely feeling. But I didn't get it there. But I still continued going because I wanted to get the healing and understand my emotions, and I'm not alone. Then when I finally found a therapist, because, you know, finding a therapist is like a needle in a haystack. Like, you got to find the right therapist, and it's going to take some time. So when I found my therapist, I was on my last breaking point because I didn't know what to do from there. And when she called me to schedule up a appointment, I told her I needed to see her right then and there. I can't wait another week or 2-3 weeks or a month. And she accommodated me. She told me to come in her office at 7 p.m. at night. And we sat there until probably 10:30, 11 o'clock, because I needed that release. And if it wasn't for her, I don't think I would have been here. Because my mind was in a bubble, doubting myself, feeling guilty, feeling stressed, feeling ashamed. Every time I walk around, I see somebody have a baby, or somebody, you know, social media is the worst. Like, you know, somebody posting their pictures of their babies. Yeah. You know, I was just like, oh my God, why? Oh. And came to realize, if I didn't go to her that day, I think I wouldn't be here today.
Yeah, like, this is the thing, when you say social media, like, the whole thing is like, okay, because of the nature of algorithms, and like, when, if you've made that announcement that you've had, oh, you had a baby, then all of a sudden, yes, the algorithm goes, hey, baby, okay, you want to see it.
Yeah, about baby.
There you go, baby, it's like, and you're like, kind of, maybe this is not the thing to be around at this present time. Maybe I should just be turning it off. But yeah, like, this is like one of the things I would imagine, like, even though in group therapy, like, yeah, you may have like not seen anyone you like considered, you know what I mean, where you could say, okay, physically, like, they're not like, there's no black women in here, there's no brown women in here and stuff like this. But didn't you feel, was there any sort of like sense of connection because you all went through a like rather heavy loss at the same time? Wasn't there some type of connection through that?
Yeah, it was a lot of connection through that. But I guess I felt like when I was telling my story, it came too aggressive. And they was just like looking at me like clenching their pearls. And I'm like, I'm not angry. I'm not, like, don't perceive me as an angry black woman. I'm just mad. I'm upset. I'm frustrated. I don't have the answer, and I want to answer. But they're looking at me like, damn, this lady just mad for no reason. And I'm like, I'm not mad. I'm just sad. I'm depressed. I'm overwhelmed. But it just, you know, they looked at me different every time I opened my mouth, and they always wanted to come and give me a hug. And I'm like, I don't want a hug. You know, like, they, you know, like, oh, come here, let me hug you.
Forget that. Look, I just need someone to be angry with me at life at this moment in time. I've got an old beaten up car in the car park across the street. If you want a couple of ladies want to come along and just like beat the living daylights out of it.
Thank you. That's all I needed. I just needed that one time to just take a bat or something just to beat it. And I think I would have felt good. But, you know, at that group meeting, it wasn't like that.
Okay. No. This is the thing, because when someone goes, when people talk about aggression, sometimes it's always seen in a negative term. But when you use aggression in sports or anything like that, especially when it's controlled aggression, it can make you a superstar. But there is times when I think sometimes the world is too much of a touchy-feely place in some, for some quarters, where, just screaming, shouting, just letting it go for a moment brings so much, relief, and let that pressure go. And I think there's not a lot of people which actually take that up, or if they're seen as, can't just talk about it. It's like, okay, I can talk about it, but I do need this side as well. I get that from you. And look, this is the thing. The energy you supply is very bubbly. It's enthusiastic. It's a joy to be around. But this is the thing. With all of that, comes with a healthy realm of passion. And that passion needs to be released in, needs to be released in, how can I say? Can be released in a loving, giving way, and it can be released in another way where, look, I'm glad if I ever cross you, if I ever done you wrong, I don't want to see on your Instagram, hey, I'm coming over to the UK. Look, just tell me, hey, we're cool, aren't we? I think there's some bit in Alaska where you gut punched. just say. Oh yeah.
I have calmed it down. I have really known that I have started healing when somebody cuts me off when I'm driving and somebody cuts me off. I just let them. But back then, man, I'll get out of my car. Kick your car. You just cut me off. But I know I have grown. I have grown now.
Excellent. Now, it has to ask, okay, look, there is many ways you could tell this story. Many ways. You could have wrote a book, you could have done a blog, you could have you can have knocked out a TV series. Why the sort of why the medium of film? Why are you using film to sort of tell these stories rather than, say, do a book? What was the thing that brought you to that?
2 years ago, I didn't really understood. I read books, but I didn't really, I read books and it was okay. Mm. But when I started looking at film, I didn't really see anybody talking about it. Grief and miscarriage, stillbirth, and infertility, and going through all these emotions. I didn't see nobody look like me. So I wanted to tell a story that the future generations and older generations could see themselves within me and many of the women that we interview, because we are here. Mm-hmm. We're human. We are here. We go through our struggles just like anybody else. But I wanted to tell the story in a way that you can see it on film and see our pain. Because you can write a book, but does that show you how I really feel? My emotions, my anger, my sadness could be on paper, but to see it is a totally different thing. So I wanted to relate and have somebody, do this film so I can relate to my audience and relate to other women that, hey, you're human. And what you're feeling, you're not alone. Because I thought for many years I was alone. But now I know I'm not.
Yeah. Here's the thing. So answer me this. How many films have you done so far, apart from this?
This is my first film. This is my first baby. Yes, I have a whole set of things. I used to do videos, music videos, but now this is actually my first project documentary that is going to be a two-part documentary that is coming soon. So We're super excited.
Two-part documentary.
And we got many more. We got many more coming up too.
Right, right. So two-part documentary. So is it going to be sort of 90 minutes a piece, or is it going to be like, how is it going to split with time, or haven't you not got to that bit yet?
We haven't got to that bit yet, but I know the first one is going to be 90 minutes. The second one is going to hopefully be the same thing as 90 minutes, because we have a lot of context to get through and want to tell a story that can help you understand and relate. But right now, you know, we're in the process of editing and, you know, making the film to the point where we catch you within the first 20 minutes. So that's the thing that we're going through right now, because we want to make sure that we have all the women that we interviewed tell a story the correct way.
I hear you. Like, so I have to ask now, like, you just mentioned music videos. Like, okay, so the leap from music videos to documentary, look, what would you say have been some of the educational points you've picked up from music videos to documentary work? Yeah.
So music videos, you don't have to do research. Documentaries, you do. You just hire your cast and they come in ready to go, ready to film. You stand over there, shake your booty.
Shake your booty. You in the white. Shake your booty. Okay. You in the red. Okay. I need you to shake your booty over there. Yeah. Okay. Okay. You, my man, you're the star. Okay. Do what you need to do.
I need you to slap it and project it.
Hashtag me too. No, is that not? Right. I need you to slap it. And then she said that razor. Was that kind of all filming? She said, "Shake your booty," and then she got the guy to slap me on the backside.
But yeah, so you know, for a documentary, you actually have to do the research. You have to make sure that you have the context that you're using to tell a story, and you need these stats and these statistics to be correct.
Yeah,
and use it. You know, you just have a great song with a great concept, you're good.
okay. Yeah, because like, this is the thing. I would imagine music videos depending where you are, can be quite lucrative if you've got a quite large music scene. This is the thing, the sort of with documentaries, I know this is more than likely, this is more of a passion project because of the nature, the subject material, the subject matter, excuse me. So doing that, plus it takes a longer time. That sort of journey going through it, has it sort of rekindled some of the things from the past, or has it sort of like helped you get closer to like some of the other people who actually come in and helped you with the documentary?
It has brung up a lot of emotions that I thought I had buried and forgotten about. It's bringing it up, because it's one thing to like how you interviewing somebody, but trying to interview yourself to tell your own story is like, oh God, you know? So I have to relate and go back to that space where it was negative and it was positive, but then go back to every situation that I felt for 3 miscarriages was something that I was like, oh man, I can't do this, but I did it. And it was hard, because telling your story is one thing. And then listening to other women go through their trauma and losing their baby is another. So for me, grabbing all of those and trying to figure out how can I get through this, there's a lot of therapy. It's a lot of therapy. And I'm glad that I see my therapist, you know, every Thursday at 1:00. You know, we speak about it, we talk about it, and I can reflect to her and give her all of me at that time, because I need it. Because, you know, I'm still living through my trauma. Even though I'm still healing, it still happens, you know. Some days I'll be good, and then some days that one thought comes in your head, you'd be like, oh man. And you try to shake it off, but now I'm learning, let me feel what I'm feeling now. Let me go through my emotions. Let me go through how I am going to perceive my date for that day. And then for the ladies, it's healing for them because this is the first time they actually got to speak to somebody about this. You know, yeah, your family might have heard it, but actually telling the world is different. So they come into me, you know, trusting in me to tell a story in a great way. And sitting down in front of the camera is not easy. It's hard. You know, those lights come on, you sweating, you know, you want to make sure that you're saying everything right. Your body language has to be okay. And you have to remember what you said last week, just want to phone conversation. So for them, I take my hat off for them because they are trusting me with their most precious vulnerability that they have. So I'm just like, man, and I have an incredible team that came together to help these women to understand that they are seen as queen. They are a miracle. They are a blessing. And I thank them every day. Every time I talk to them, I thank them every day, because if it wasn't for them, I would just be my story.
Mm. Yeah, no. I understand that. But yeah, wow. And like, this is the thing with regards to this, is this the first, like you mentioned other things are coming down the line. Is this the first of many documentaries? And if this is the first of many documentaries, what is it going to be focused around? Women's health, like mental health, or is it just going to be like different things which capture what's going on in the world at that current time?
Yeah, I think it's going to capture what's going on in the world at that time. You know, right now we are dealing with, you know, trying to pass legislation now for the George Floyd Act. We are, you know, keeping an eye on that right now. That's a story in itself. Like, you know, why is it taking so long for the Congress and the Senate, House to pass this bill for, you know, the Policing Act to be presented? And then we also looking at the Voters Act in America, where, you know, they're trying to suppress the Black vote. So that's a lot of, you know, context that we need to look at. And then we also legalizing marijuana, you know, in certain states now. So it's a lot of context out there that, you know, we are watching out for, and we hopefully get to touch on and, you know, see how this plays out. But right now, this passion project for me is telling my life story and for many others to come along after, you know.
So with this, like, where would you say the next sort of, how can I say, what would you like to see happen in the next 3 to 5 years with either regarding either yourself or with regards to your, like, oh my God, why am I, production company? What, how is that a difficult word? Production company. let me say that again. Production company.
Well, I'm claiming it in the name of Jesus. Like, this production company hopefully will land into the arms of Tyler Perry, 50 Cent, you know, Ava DuVernay. Like, anybody that sees this documentary, please look out for a sister. I'm claiming it in the name of Jesus that we can work on projects together. We can do something that captures the essence of Black and Brown people. You know, we want us to have a voice where they can see us, not being angry, not being, you know, mad or sad. They can see us in a light where you can understand our pain. You can understand who we are. See us as individuals, not just by the color of our skin, to see us as individuals. And I think that will be the essence that I see myself in the next 5 years, telling stories that captivate an audience that understands that we're here and that we're not going nowhere. You're gonna love us. We're gonna make you love us. We're gonna make you hug us, we're gonna make us love us, like you love our, you know, our culture and stuff like that, but you will actually love each and every one of us.
Liking it. Now I see it. Now, with regards to yourself, now, what apart from this, what would you say you're looking for as a sort of personal triumph for yourself? Like, if someone, you can go 3,000 miles, you've gone up Everest, you swam all five of the Great Lakes. Is there anything which you want in life to be like, yeah, that's my triumph, this is what I did, look at me, he's in the house? Yeah, what is there anything like that out there for you?
Man, I guess being a great mom, showing her that she is the most precious thing to me and her father. And I guess I did everything that I wanted to do. I still got more. I still got more to do. I don't know.
Yeah. Come on now. Come on. Look.
Come to London to meet you, you know.
Wait a second. We're good. We're good. Okay. We're okay. We're okay. No. Okay. Cool. Yeah. Come to London. Yeah. Okay.
After the talk, I house with Renita, stuff like that. I don't know. I just want me to find who Teresa is, and I'm doing it. I'm doing that slowly but surely, and hopefully good things will happen for me. I'm claiming it. Things is going to happen good.
Yeah. One of the things. There you go. One of the things I've got to say, got to admire, is the fact that you have started your own production company and you're going with it. And some of the challenges which come out of this quite a lot of them are unforeseen. What would you say was the sort of thing which surprised you the most? Basically starting the production company, in the realms of documentaries, apart from the research, obviously.
Oh, man. The whole list.
Hey.
Finances, man. Finances was one of those things where I was damn, I gotta put out so much money for this. But I'm glad that I'm a workaholic, I'm a hustler, and everything that I wanted and I needed and people seen came to fruition, where this production company is my baby right now. My little person. So getting everything that I needed and everything that we wanted came in so quickly, I was shocked. But right now, getting everything on schedule, trying to meet the deadlines, interviewing people and having people, recap what they are saying and stuff like that. So it's been a roller coaster, but it's been a good roller coaster, not a bad one. One of those roller coasters that you just glide through the waves,
Not scream with your eyes closed. Does exactly. Yeah. Okay.
I hear you.
Yeah. Like, oh God, make it stop. Why? Why is it going upside down? Jesus Lord, exactly. Jesus, help me. God, if you get me off this roller coaster, I'll dedicate my life to helping people in the poor and stuff like this. Get off the roller coaster. Get off the ground. It's like, yeah, not right now, God. In the future.
Yeah.
In the future. Just like,
My whole team has been incredible, from the director to the producer to the co-producer to the assistant to the makeup artist to everybody that's came together. It has been a great experience because these people are focused. They know maternal Black health is important and it's a crisis, so they are willing to they was willing to step up to the plate, clear their schedule just to make this project happen. So I take my hat off to them, because they seen me, they heard me, and I'm thankful for them.
Like, this is the thing, like, yeah, pulling together a team, like getting the finances sorted, because like one of the things people just take for granted, oh, you're filming something, but it, like, camera equipment is not cheap to either buy, God help you if you're buying it, or to rent it. And like, you know what I mean? Like, when renting it, there's going to be times where it's the equipment you need is not going to be there at the time. Like,
exactly.
So, yeah. So are you renting your equipment, or are you like doing the painstaking thing of that's like, yeah, you're building your like gear up over a slow period of time? I don't know.
No, I got some equipment. My director, he has like all the equipment. He spent a lot of money for his equipment, and I'm like, whew, that's like a house payment right there. Yeah. But for me, I got my equipment. So right now we are doing short films. For the time being, while everything is being editing. So right now, my assistant and I and my co-producer, we're doing short films that just captivate, you know, just living in South Carolina, the action after COVID, because when COVID happened, everything was shut down. So now you see everybody actually outside. So we wanted to film that and see, like, you know, from the time you was locked in your house till the time now, you got your vaccine and you don't have to wear a mask. How has it changed and how has it affected everybody? So that's what we're doing now.
Yeah, because like one of the things last 15 months, oh, what a joy. But like, this is the thing. How did you manage to still pull together? Like, did you pull together your team before everything was locked down or during the time when everything was locked down?
During the time that, I think, you know, 2020 was the day, last year was the moment where I was like, yes, we're gonna pull this team together. It was home. So you couldn't say you couldn't do nothing. You couldn't say that you was working. You know, yeah. You was actually home. Like, if you didn't work from home, you was actually home. Yeah. So it was easy to call somebody and be like, hey, I know you home, so help a sister out. It was easy to get somebody on a Zoom call. It was easy to pitch a contact to somebody. Last year, this year, everybody's busy right now. They like, oh, my schedule is booked. But last year, I'm thankful for COVID, but I'm not thankful for COVID. But it brung everybody together to start having a conversation and getting the whole team together.
You took advantage of the opportunity while the chaos was going on.
Yes. Yep. And it was easy to get everybody in the room via Zoom.
Everyone in the room, John, you okay? Oh,
yeah.
Oh no, you're gonna sit there like, what have I done? Yeah. Put you guys here all together under the cover of darkness. And John had to go and cough. He's like, he just coughed again. Stop it. He's like, okay.
And then everything was locked down. Last year, we got the dates and stuff for this year. So it was pretty good, because then all the restrictions started lifting up and we got to be in a room together, making sure everybody was either vaccinated or had a negative COVID shot, had a negative result. So it was good because we had it staggered out so everybody wouldn't be on top of each other. Mm. And the area that we was filming was spaced out. So it wouldn't be like you had to be up close to somebody. It was like, you know, staggered out and everything was good. So I think this was pretty, pretty good compared to, you know, most productions that I've seen that, you know, everybody's around, you know. Yeah. But this time everything worked out.
Yeah, because I remember talking, can't remember her name off the top of my head, but she was like, she worked on like television production in New York City. And like her husband was working on special criminal investigations. And mm-hmm. She was working on another TV show herself. And like the whole thing is, with all the sort of different protocols they had to put in place, it wasn't uniform throughout each show. It was so you had to adhere to a certain protocol on one show. Then when she was on another show, she had to adhere to a number of different other protocols. She was on Law and Order. That's where she met her husband. Yeah, basically.
I love that show.
Yeah, special.
I just want to be an extra. This.
Yeah, I was like, I also was like, so you met your husband there? Where, like, a young lady who got murdered, and that's where he asked you out. He's like,
I love it.
It's like, I bet you like sitting next to the door and stuff like this. Like, it's like movement. It's like, not today, out of the door. So this is the thing. When I hear about a large scale production and like with your production, like don't get me wrong, like yeah, your production is very impressive and all that, but it's like there's a slight difference.
It really is.
Oh yeah,
it's way different.
Yeah, well, yeah. And like, I find it very interesting to like, you know, the sort of the protocols you had to take to like, you know what I mean, make sure everyone's like working or still can work, and like doing the whole of staggered like side of things, and like, yeah, getting like COVID, like getting either vaccinated or making sure you got a negative test. That costs a pretty penny to do, I imagine.
Well, because we shot in New York City, so New York City is offering the shots for free and also the test for free. So we didn't really have to pay. That wasn't in our budget. So we was happy that, you know, New York City is the mecca, the hub, where they can just go and make an appointment or go and walk up and just have a negative, you know, get the test done. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you're like going from South Carolina all the way up to New York to do this.
We filmed in New York City. Yep. My whole production team is in New York City. I'm the only one in South Carolina.
Right. So did you go there like to New York just because that's where the that's where the talent was to do the documentary? Or was it other reasons?
That was where we got a lot of the responses from the interviewees from New York City and from Maryland. And then my production team are based out of New York. So they are in Brooklyn and in Jersey. So it was a great concept to do it out there instead of doing it in South Carolina, because it was more easier for everybody to maneuver within the boroughs, you know.
Yeah.
Instead of coming to South Carolina, they'd be like, oh God, that's boring.
Why is it so hot? Oh God, why? got your cameraman going, I don't want to film today, it's too hot.
Yeah.
Just pick that camera up and start filming with a smile on your face. <He's> like,
So the girls that we interviewed, they were living in New York City. So
yeah.
One lived in the Bronx, Brooklyn, and Jersey. And then my production team, they lived in Brooklyn and Jersey. And then the other ladies that we filmed was in the D.C. area, Maryland, D.C. area. So we had to drive from New York City to Maryland to shoot them in Maryland. So it was pretty good. It was like two locations, very nice locations that accommodated everybody within that area, because we didn't want them to feel like they had to travel far or not be in a comfort of their element, and you know, they familiarized in a city, so we wanted to make sure that we accommodated them on their terms.
I see very nice. But it sounds like you're trying to slowly sneak your way back into New York, like by
I am just saying
I'm trying. Like, slowly but surely. Hey, you might have to live outside of New York in Yonkers, maybe. You never know.
Maybe, but Yonkers got up there too.
You've muted yourself. Okay. You're back. There you go.
I'm back.
You think you're laughing so hard, you muted yourself. I don't know. What are you like? Okay, if you can't get into Yonkers, you might have to go even further north, either Poughkeepsie.
That's for Velcro.
Look, come on now. Poughkeepsie. Oh, yeah.
That's not bad. It's the Metro North.
Yes. About hour and 20 minutes away from New York, I believe.
That's not. I
can do the kitchen. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, you see. You see, this brick from the UK.
I love it.
Yeah, residential tips. As I go, I was advised by a Brit to like move here. It's like, yeah, he said he just did summers up here. It was good enough. So, yeah. He said Yonkers first. He was like, no, that's up there. No. It's too close. He's like, oh, okay. But yeah. No.
But I do really want to go back, but when it's, you know, good for Teresa to go back. You know, I want to, but then I'm like, oh, I like the comfort of my home. Like, you know, I can come in my driveway and park my car and don't have to worry about getting up at 9 a.m. to move my car to the other side of the street.
That's one of the things about, I think, which is highlighted from since last year. Because look, I live in London, basically. Yeah. Like one of the world's largest cities, but it's like, yeah, if you live here, if you want to have the garden, if you want to have the nice house, let's just say, like, I have to be doing a hell of a lot better on my tax code before I can actually get that. It's like, yeah, in London. Yeah, so it doesn't work out. And like with regards to London and sort of living bringing up a kid and everything like this, like if it was me, like what London was when I was a kid is different to what London is now. And I would say London, it's most probably a lot safer than it was back when I was a kid, but it's still very, very much different. You don't sort of get kids like doing kids things on the street. It's like, yeah, what are you kids up to? Nothing. And generally, that nothing is just like standing around talking, playing a random game, like where they're running around just free and loose. It's like, yeah, you very rarely capture, but that would sound wrong. It's like, you really capture a kid. By themselves. But it's one of those things you don't really sort of get that sort of, yeah, that group kid, let's just hang out on the streets. And I would imagine in New York, that is still quite a challenge to do. But in South Carolina, it might be a lot different. I don't know.
You don't see nobody here. It's like, see like golf carts, or you see the teenagers that do have cars driving, but you don't do it much. They go to the bowling alley or go to the, what else? They at the beach now because the beach is open. So you don't really see them hanging out on the street corners. I've never seen anybody at the street corners.
Here I was trying to stoke some form of nostalgia of days gone by, but they're not out there. They go to the beach and the bowling alley. That's it. That's it. My daughter can be inside in New York as well. Yeah. She ain't gonna be much. Okay.
Yeah. I remember growing up in Queens in Lafayette City, we had the pool, so you knew all the neighborhood kids in each building was at the pool because it's summertime, it's hot. And you went to Section 5 to the pool and had a good old time. But not out here. It's like, okay, well, we're going to go to the beach, or we're going to go to the Broadway at the beach and just have some fun, and that's it.
Fair enough. Like, look, you know what? Section 5, it's like, you know, Section 5, the whole thing.
Section 5,
the pool. In that pool. That's like, run along, jump in.
And you can smell chlorine coming off because there was a lot of chlorine they put in there.
The old red eye. It's like, you're not flying, but you bet definitely in that pool. There's like, ah, what's wrong with you? There's like, it is, oh God, why does it sting so? You just been to section 5. You got in the water. Yeah, it was a good time. Oh, why are they still watering? Ah. Charlie, yeah, get me some tissue. Oh, God.
No, tissue ain't gonna work for that. That was back in the days. Yep.
Awesome. Now, I have to ask. This is most probably going to be one of the questions where I get to know you a little bit better and get your psychological profile. I know the subject matter we've covered has been a little bit serious, but like, you know what I mean? There has been an air of levity between our conversation. Yes. But like, yeah, this question, and like, yes, it's a very serious question. Now, you know the cast of the Muppets?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, if there's one film you could take and replace the whole cast except one actor with the Muppets, which film would that be?
Oh my God. This is a good, oh man, you put me on the spot. Oh my God.
Come on now.
I will have to say my favorite movie. Friday.
Friday. Okay, yeah.
That's my favorite. Like, I can see the Muppets playing Smokey. I can see somebody playing Smokey. Or Devo.
Bye-bye. What are you like? So, okay, right. Okay, yeah. So who would be the human? Who would be that one poor human who would have to act amongst the Muppets?
John Witherspoon. John Witherspoon. Yeah, Pop. But yeah, I can see playing good in Granddad in the Boondock. So I can see him playing with them. Man, it'll be excited.
Thank God him slapping Muppets around left and right. So, okay. So, right. I have to ask then, who would be playing Ice Cube and who would be playing Chris Tucker? Like, it's like,
oh, man. Okay.
Yeah, you see, because, like, yeah. This has many levels.
I can see Elmo playing Chris Tucker.
Elmo.
I can see. Oh, who else?
Oscar the Grouch. Yeah. Oh, thank God.
And Miss Piggy is playing Ice Cube's girlfriend. Who the fuck is that bitch? I got it. Yes. That's my next movie. Short film. Come to you.
We won't be selling that one to Disney. I tell you that now.
It won't be going.
Oh, okay.
They'll be like, denied.
Awesome.
But I can see it. I can see it. Yeah.
I asked the question and like, you know what, you know, like, yeah, I got to blame myself, you know what?
Yes.
Like, there's no one else to blame because like, yeah, I'm the constant in this equation. Yeah, but you know what, I'm glad I got you entertained. You're like, yeah.
Yes, thank you. Wow, that's Yeah, that would be, and I can see them playing Friday after next and next Friday. Yeah, sequel, three sequels.
Oh, no. You know what? At least you didn't say house party because that would be all kind of trippy as
Ooh. That's a
well.
good one too.
Hey,
Bert and Ernie can play Kid and Play. Tisha Campbell can be Miss Piggy, or the other lady can be Miss Piggy. Yeah. Okay. And who's gonna play Martin Lawrence? Oh.
got you smart, yeah. I've got you thinking big time.
Yes, you do.
Oh my Lord. Oh my Lord. Yes. Oh, it kind of makes me sad that it has to end. But nevertheless, there you go. My poor cheeks. Oh. It's fine. Oh, I love it. Oh, brilliant. Can you tell the lovely people how they can find you out there on the big wide web?
Yes, you can reach me at JhenaeProductions.com or Jhene, spelled with JHENE Productions, with an S at the end of Productions, at gmail.com, and on all social media platforms, Jhene Productions at Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
Perfect, perfect. What I'll do, I'll also put all of this information in the show notes, the description. So yes, please seek her out, seek Teresa out, and yes, you'll have a very interesting conversation as well.
Keep stay tuned to my documentary, Life After Loss. It's telling about a Black woman's struggle and many other Black women's struggles in America.
Outstanding, outstanding. Teresa, thank you for coming on today. You have been
Thank
absolutely awesome. joy to have.
you. Thank you. Thank you. You have been a pleasure, and I appreciate you from the top of your head to the bottom of your feet. I thank you, my brother.
What can I say? Yep. You know what? I'm saying I'll send out checks, but you know what? For you, I'll send you a check, but don't try to catch it until 2022. Like 2020, 2022. Like, you ain't in the distant future. It's the future. Oh, on that happy note, I'd like to say thank you to you, my friends, my life warriors. Please stay safe, stay well, be awesome, be excellent, be fantastic, be all the positive bees you can be in this world, and then some. Woo! Ha! Peace. And whoa, 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 and we are.